relaxation or got out and did something exciting. There's so much going on in our area this last weekend. I did lots of eating and lots of talking, so no change there then. I was thinking about those poor souls on the replacement bus service between Bath and Bristol, thinking they could maybe crack on with some communal singing, you know, keep the energy up while you're stuck in traffic on Brislington Hill. So coming up today on the show, we have a writer whose debut book is fresh off the printing press. She's actually best known for boosting the fortunes of the BBC's Casualty drama, turning it into a real hit show. We're going to talk to Susan Gander very soon. And we have a woman who calls herself Bird. She picked up the cello at the age of just 6. Now she can play all sorts of instruments, and she's a singer as well. So we have Bird coming up before the end of the show. A bird and a woman called Bird. Plus another connection. I'm looking for a year today. Can you guess it? If you can, get in touch with the show. It's a good one today. It's always good. It all starts after 2:30. Have a go at that. And great music as well. I'm going to play you James Morrison's new one. Donna Summer and this one from the Drifters.
You can dance every dance with the guy who gives you the eye and let him hold you tight. You can smile every smile for the man who held your hand beneath the pale moonlight. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Oh, I know,
oh, I know
that the music's fine like sparkling wine. Go and have your fun.
Oh, I know.
Laugh and sing.
Yes, I know.
But while you're apart, don't give your heart to anyone. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Baby, don't you know I love you so? Can't you feel it when we touch? I will never, never let you go. I love you oh so much. You can dance,
you can dance.
Go and carry on till the night is gone and it's time to go. If he asks, if you're all alone, can he take you home? You must tell him no. Cause don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last dance for me. Say the last dance for me.
The Drifters save the last dance for me, which is fine unless it's chirpy chirpy cheep cheep, then no chance. Play the connection after 2:30 today. I'm going to play you 4 tunes. I'll give you some clues along the way. All you have to do, simple as this, is try and think which year all those songs were in the UK charts and get in touch with the show. Dead easy, all starts after 2:30. If you're on holiday in the West Country, you're allowed to play too as well. That's all fine. I'll give you text number and all the contacts just after 2:30. But my first guest, debut novel is hot off the press and getting great reviews as well. Her background is actually in telly. She helped to make the BBC show Casualty the huge success it continues to be today. Let's say hi to Susan Gander. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Claire.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing brilliantly. Thank you very much.
Wonderful. We're speaking to you from Plymouth today, and you told me at the beginning they've essentially put you in a box with a microphone to speak.
Yes, I'm in a cupboard with a microphone all by myself.
We're so kind. We really treat our guests well.
I don't even get a coffee or a tea.
How mean. Oh, dear. Look, if it was me, honestly, I would make you something. At the very least, a mellow girl's. Yeah?
Yeah.
Now then, tell us about the book, because this has a very dramatic beginning. Like, even the first page is properly dramatic. And part of the book is set in the Great War, isn't it?
Yes, it's got 2 storylines. Basically, 2 girls, Samantha Foster and Jessica Brown, and Jess lives in the 20th century in 1916, just at the start of the First World War, and Sam is in the 21st century now, 2016. So they're 100 years apart, but they're going to meet, past and present are going to come and meet in this book.
And did you have some fascination with the Great War? Is that why you thought this might be the way to go with the book?
Well, I started a book very similar to this, which was for a much earlier, younger readership, and it had the First World War in it, and I realised that there was no way that I could cover the First World War the way I wanted to cover it for a readership of 8 to 12. So then I decided, when I did Come to Take You Home, to make it young adult, adult crossover. And I really got into the First World War. But the First World War in We've Come to Take You Home is actually on the home front rather than on the military front, although we do touch on the military front. So it was really reading the letters and diaries of all the women and the children who were left behind while their husbands and their brothers and their fiancés went off to war.
How did you find that, reading that material?
I was astonished. I was absolutely astonished by not only the men and their diaries and their letters, but the women, how they could express themselves emotionally. They really could, with such honesty and truth. And when I was writing the book, I really didn't want to fail them. I really did. So I tried to approach the book with the same, if you like, honesty, but emotional intensity as they showed in their diaries and their letters.
And are there stories that you picked out of those diaries and letters that end up in the book in one way or another?
There was no single one. There are just lots and lots of moments taken from many, many different lives. And you spend a year, 2 years researching, and it just sort of melts into your soul, if you like. And when you start writing, then they bubble to the surface and you remember little incidents, and all then what happens is all those little incidents sort of mold into one, if you like, into the character of Jess and what happens to her in the book.
Yeah, I know we had the BBC's World War One at Home series, which we broadcast a lot of on this radio station, and that was just basically the stories of everyday people, you know, dealing with the war at home.
Absolutely. And Jess's, what also I wanted to do with my story was that people had written books about the home front, but they were often sort of middle class females. And what I wanted to do was make it working class, if you like. And Jess is 15 at the start of the book, and we look at it through her life, what happens to her mum, her dad, indeed her baby brother. And you look at it from a very, very different perspective to most of the books that have been written about the First World War.
So you have that aspect of it, and then, as you say, this is about two women. There's a connection between them, and there's 100 years between them, isn't there?
Yeah, it is indeed, but I'm not going to tell you what the connection is, and I'm not going to tell
you
about
it. No, don't spoil it.
But absolutely, there's Samantha, Sam. And Sam is a 21st century girl. She's a 2016 girl, if you like. She's about to be 16, and her life changes dramatically when her dad is rushed into intensive care with a suspected brain hemorrhage. And what happens is the way Jess's life is torn to pieces by the war. Sam's life, it looks as though Sam's life is going to be torn to pieces by the death of her father. And as his condition worsens, what happens is that Sam starts to dream, and the dreams that she gets are very frequent, and they get more and more frightening. And then she realises that what she's experiencing, she's not actually having dreams, but she's actually living somebody else's life.
Yeah. And was it a labour of love writing this book, or did you find it a struggle?
It's a mix. It's an absolute mix. It's a labour of love. When it goes well, you can't, you feel great. You might just write a sentence and it sings, and you think, that was worth doing. But for every sentence that sings, you have days, lots of people are different. I have days when it's a real, real grind. And there's no way, I think people think that writers sit down and just turn on a tap in the morning at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and all these words come gushing out, but they don't. You sit there, sort of, in a cupboard, staring at the wall, hoping that something will come out. Personally, and so we're all different, I always visualise a chapter, a sequence, and I see it all the way through. It's like pictures in my head, a little film being played, and then I have to get it onto the paper, and it's a struggle to get what you see in your head, the pictures, down onto the paper. That's my struggle anyway.
Does it help, you were saying about visualising the whole thing, does it help that you've got a TV background?
I think so, and also my dad was in films, so I grew up in a, and my mother was a costume designer, in fact. So we had we were talking scripts and pictures and stories all the time, and that helped me when I worked on TV on Casualty. It was sort of, I didn't have any formal training. I think my formal training, if you like, was living with my family, with my mum and dad, and hearing people talk and watching the films being made and the final product on the screen. So I'm a visual writer, basically.
And yeah, exactly. When you set out to write this book, did you always know how it was going to end up?
Difficult one. Not at the beginning, when I began to think about it, I didn't know what the end was going to be. Everyone's different, I tend to plot everything through each chapter. And that took me about a year to do, actually, going chapter to the end.
So that's quite a long process in itself,
Yeah. And that is actually where a lot of your hard work goes in, because you're really trying to get those stories, worked out, how they're going to bounce off each other structurally. But saying that, I wrote the end of that book. I don't know how many times I wrote the end of that book. And I think the last time I wrote it completely was about May last year. And I finally did it then. I thought, the book's ready to go now.
Yeah.
I couldn't take that ending to anywhere else. It was where it was.
You were happy with it at that point.
As happy as anyone could be.
Susan, we'll talk some more in a moment. Let's have some more music. I want to talk to you about Casualty in just a moment. And my first guest, Susan Gander, is with us this afternoon. First of Four Tops, Baby, I Need Your Loving. Baby, I Need Your Loving, 23 minutes past 2, Monday show with Claire Kavanagh on your BBC local radio station. Back to my first guest, her name is Susan Gander. She's got her debut novel out, We've Come to Take You Home. But she's also known, aren't you, Susan, for your work on Casualty, which of course used to be made in Bristol before the Welsh stole it off us. And was a big success. Your part in that was a big success.
Yes, I joined it actually at about the second series. And to be honest, it wasn't doing very well then. And there were even rumours around the BBC that they were going to pull it.
Mm.
So I came on as a trainee, and I think people thought, well, she can't make it any worse. She might make it a bit better.
Charming.
I couldn't fail, basically.
Okay.
And what we did was we got a very strong team of writers in, and we refocused the show, making it much more serious. Each episode had a really strong story, rather than a series where you have lots and lots of ongoing stories.
Right.
So we gave the writers, and we gave the writers off their head, and we did some very, very, they were, we didn't tell them what to write. They came in saying, I'd like to write a story about this, I'd like to do that. And off we went, and we went from 7 million up to 14 million, and 14 million these days, I mean, people just don't get those ratings anymore.
So you doubled the ratings by changing the way that the whole thing was made.
Yeah, I think we became much more writer based and less soapy, because the previous series had been very, very much. Writers have been told, you've got to do this, you've got to cover this, there's this relationship between this. And I tried to actually minimise that, because I noticed when I was talking to writers, they found that side of it really difficult. So what we did was we honoured our regulars, because obviously people like Charlie and Megan not around anymore, but when I was there working on a serious show, she was a very important character. What we did was we gave them material, but we gave them material through the story of the week.
Mm.
And it worked.
Yeah.
We had a great time.
How satisfying is that, that you are able to have that much impact on a show that's been around for ages?
It was a wonderful time. I don't think... I think now people are so scared of ratings and so scared of where things are going that there's much more control on high. It was a heavenly time to work on that show, because as soon as the ratings began to go up, instead of actually controlling us, we had a great producer who basically said, right, you know, we'll let the team go. They let us go, and we pretty much did whatever we wanted to do. And we were getting fantastic coverage in national newspapers. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. And it just shows that, I always say, don't dumb down. I never dumb down. I didn't dumb down with We've Come to Take You Home. It's got a very, very complicated structure. But I wanted that, actually, that structure that I've used in We Come to Take You Home is pretty much a casualty episode structure.
Really?
Yeah, when I was working on it anyway.
I'm really interested in this, because do TV makers go out to shock all the time? And is that normally the way of getting the ratings in?
I never personally went out to shock.
Mm.
I always looked for the stories that had emotional pull, that put our characters in incredibly difficult situations, which made them, you know, rise to the mark or even fail sometimes. Most important to me was I always tried to write a story or encourage a story of a writer that had shades of grey. I never wanted to anything at the end of a show for people to say black and white.
Mm.
What I wanted to do is people to go home and talk about it and say, well, what would I have done? Would I have done that?
That sort of dilemma thing, yeah.
And I think that's quite rare, and I don't think it happens enough. You know, you have to respect your viewer and give room for your viewer to think and have ideas.
You touched on it at the in the first half, your dad. He was a film art director, and there are so many jobs on films that I sort of lose track of what people do. So what does a film art director do?
Okay, he creates the visual world that you see on the film screen. So he will have found a location. In the case of Lawrence of Arabia, a lot of it was shot in the desert, but believe it or not, sand isn't... You know, it's quite different, one sand dune to another, and you have to think about logistics of getting your crew there and everything else. So an art director will look for locations, choose the location in the country where a film is going to be shot. Also, create, say in the case of Dr. Zhivago, there was a wonderful ice palace, and that was actually built, and that ice, in fact, was molten wax.
Right.
Yeah, and that is an art, that's an art director's job. How do I create a palace out of ice?
and he worked on the most amazing films. Great Gatsby, you mentioned it, Dr. Zhivago, Lawrence of Arabia. What an incredible kind of CV that is.
It's incredible. He also, well, he won 4 Oscars, which is pretty much, I think he's the only person in the UK who's ever won 4 Oscars, and I think it might even be a first worldwide. And they were for Dr. Zhivago, Lawrence of Arabia, the wonderful musical Oliver, and Nicholas Alexander, which is Back to Russia again.
Yeah. And that must have been a huge, and what your mum did as well, a huge inspiration for you, getting into the business that you did get into.
I've never really known any different. I always thought I would probably work in the business in some shape or form. I never really knew. I went into the BBC actually as a secretary. Yeah. Nobody really knew about my dad. And as far as I tried much of the time to get through doors actually just on my own merit. I really didn't go on about him. It's been wonderful that I got to where I did, really. But there's no doubt that sitting around that breakfast table, listening to people talk about scripts, as I said before, that was my training ground.
And it's just that thing where you realise that it is actually a job, that it's not just a fantasy, if you can hear people talking about it and actually doing it.
Absolutely. And my proudest moments when I was on casualty was going home, or going into work, actually, on a Monday morning on the tube, and listening to people around me on the tube talking about the casualty episode they'd seen on Saturday night.
That's great, isn't it?
That makes it real. It really does.
And how desperate were you to say, oh, I was part of that,
to those people? I just sat there, I think, looking a bit sort of smiley. But also, if they didn't like something, you know, you had to have a listen then as well.
That's
you
true.
Know, oh, I didn't buy that bit. Oh, Megan wouldn't have done that. What was Charlie doing about that?
Yeah, you would get it in the neck for something, no doubt.
Go to the office and change that, it's not working.
Now, Susan, is this the first of many books that you're going to write?
I'm not sure about many, but I have got some very strong ideas for a second one, which I think might continue with Sam and Jess, and we might give the Second World War a go, but I haven't worked out quite yet how to deal with it all. But it would be, I love those characters so much, Sam, Jess, and Tom as well. There is a male character in there, and he's a soldier on the Western Front. And I hate to say goodbye to them. They're very, very dear to me.
Well, not only is it a brilliant idea, but it will also, because this is for the young adult audience, it'll also teach young people something as well, won't it?
I think so. It's also for the adult audience, and that's what's good about it. We've had teenagers read it. We've had 80-year-olds read it. Mm. We've had men, women, boys and girls read it, and they've all really enjoyed it. But the aim of in fact, it was my dad who said to me, I see a 21st century girl, Susan, standing on a 20th century battlefront. I don't know how you're going to do it, but that's what I see. It took me a long time to work it out, but that's the essence of the book, really. A 21st century girl, Sam, standing on a 20th century battlefront.
Nice. Well, I think you've done it. Susan, great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Claire.
The book's called We've Come to Take You Home. It's by Susan Gander, and you can get it now.